Okay. Right, so we're approaching Parshat Bamidbar, and it's also the Shabbat before Shavuot, and the discourse, which was said in 1966, it takes off from a verse which is in the Haftorah. And the Haftorah goes like this. If we look at the beginning, it's chapter 2 of Hoshea. And so it says, V'haya mispar b'nei Yisrael, the number of the Jewish people, will be k'chol hayam, like the sand of the sea, asher lo yimad v'lo yisafer, which cannot be counted, can't be measured, and it can't be counted. And it'll be, instead of saying to them, Lo ami atem, you are not my people, instead it will be, Ye'amelehem b'nei kel chai, you are the children of the living God. Now you see, this chapter follows the first chapter. The first chapter is very critical. The first chapter of Hoshea is speaking about the way the Jewish people have forsaken God in all kinds of ways. It's a very dramatic and powerful chapter where God tells the prophet Hoshea that he should marry a prostitute in order to present the image that the Jewish people have been unfaithful to God. They have worshipped idols, which is like a woman going to another man. So it's this imagery of rejection of the Jewish people because of the way they behaved. And here in chapter 2, it sort of all reverses, and it's repentance, and it's accepting them again, and they will be accepted. They are joined to God. And then he goes on, V'nikpatsu b'nei Yehuda u'b'nei Yisrael yachdav, and the children of Judah and of Israel will gather together. V'samu lahem rosh echad, they will have one leader. V'alu min ha'aretz, and they'll go up from the land. Ki gadol yom Yisrael, because great will be the day of gathering those who are scattered. Now, going up from the land means going up, I think, from the land where they've been dispersed. And so here it's, just a second. That's right. They're going up from the lands where they've been dispersed, and they will be gathered back together. And this word Yisrael is like, you can see the word Zera in it, like scattering seeds. They've been scattered, but now they're all going to be gathered together again. And it's a very moving chapter, and this continues, and that is the Haftorah for this Shabbat. So that's the key, that's the verse, the theme with which the discourse begins. And so now we'll have the melody of the discourse in order to help us understand what it's going to say. O yam ba ya 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 ram ya ya ram ra yo yam ba yam ba yam ba yam ba yom ba yom ha ya ram ba ya ya ram ba yom ba ho ya ya ram ba yam ba yo ya ya ram ba yam ba yo ba ya ram ba ya ya ram ba ho ha ha yam ba ya ram ba yam ba yam ba ya ram ba ho yam ba bo yam ba bo. Right, so if we go into the discourse, so that's on page Hey. So first of all, it's going to repeat the first verse. V'hayam mispar b'nei Yisrael k'chol hayam, the number. Now, what the discourse is going to focus on, or particularly focus on, is the concept of number. The number of the Jewish people, of b'nei Yisrael, will be like the sand of the sea, asher lo yimad v'lo yisafer merov, which cannot be measured or counted, because it will be so many. So there's a number, and not being counted. being too many to be counted. So it's finite and it's infinite. And it'll be, instead of saying to them, you are not my people, it'll be said to them, you are the children of the living God. And the children of Judah and Israel will gather together. And they will give themselves one leader. Ki gadol yom Yisrael, because great is the day when they'll all be gathered in together. V'yadu ha-diyuk v'zeh, and it's known, the questions about this. Shebitchilo ne'ma v'haya mispa b'nei Yisrael. First of all, it begins by saying the number of the Jewish people will be so-and-so. Haynu sheyeh be'ofen shel mispa davka. That means that they will be numbered. They will have a number. Even if you say it's like the sand of the sea. Okay, but there's a number. And then it says, it's a number which can't be measured and can't be counted. If you're just analyzing the verse in terms of its poetic imagery, so the image is that the sand of the sea is a numberless quantity. But the way in which the discourse is taking it is that, first of all, it speaks of number, and then it says that it's a number which cannot be counted. So you've got two different dimensions, the number which can be counted and the number which can't be counted. So that means it's something higher than number. So you have a realm which is numbered, can be numbered, and a realm which is higher than numbering. Now, in terms of the Sphira, we very often think of, in Hasidic thought, that the Sphira Malchut, kingship, the Shekhinah, the Divine Presence, that relates to numbering. That relates to this world, to the finitude of this world, and to the ability to give numbers to things. Whereas higher up the Sefirot is on a higher level, is beyond number. And so what we're talking about here are the two dimensions of within number, within the realm of number, a finite realm, and an infinite realm, which is beyond number. Gam tzarich la'avin, we also have to understand how the different parts of this opening phrase fit together. So it takes these maya shaychud bein atchalat ha-katuv. What's the connection between the beginning of the verse where it says v'haya mispar b'nei Yisrael, the number of the Jewish people will be, lehemshech ha-katuv, to what it says later on. Vahaya bimkom, instead of being called not my people, you will be called my people. And also, v'lepasuk shel ha'achra, v'nikpatzu, and they'll gather together and they'll have one leader, ki gadol yom Yisrael, and because great will be the day of their gathering from where they were scattered. How does it all fit together? Gam tzarich lavin, we also have to understand, ha'shaychut ipsukim anal lechag ha'shvuot. How do these verses, how does this whole concept relate to the festival of Shavuot? The Nepsukim Elohim Bahaftarat Parshat Bamidbar, these verses come in the Haftarah of our Parsha. And he goes on to say that we always read Bamidbar before Shavuot. Sometimes there's another Sedra Naso, which we also read sometimes before Shavuot. But Bamidbar is always before Shavuot, either one Sedra away or immediately before Shavuot, as this year. So how does this relate to Shavuot? And so that's the question. So there's three main questions. One is about numbering and beyond number. One is about how the verses fit together. And the other is, what is the connection to Shavuot? So with that, we can turn over the page and go to the next page. Bet. Yes, so that's on page Vav. And it says Bet there, paragraph Bet. Va'inyan bazeh, and the meaning of this is the Fechush HaKatuv, the meaning of the verse, V'haya mispa b'nei Yisrael, the number of the Jewish people will be so-and-so. And then it says, Hashelo yimad velo yisafer, a number which is beyond measure and which can't be counted. Hu shehamispatz mo, it means that the number itself, yeh bifchina shelamayle min hamispa, the number will be in a way which is above numbering, which in many senses is really the simple meaning of the verse. It says the number will be like the sand of the sea. So you can't count the sand normally. So, you know, you can make some kind of estimation, you know, you could get a cubic foot of a cubic meter of sand and count how many grains of sand are there, and then make an estimate how many cubic meters there are around the whole sea. So you can make an estimate. But in terms of the verse in Hosea, it's saying they will have a number which is above number. When you say that something can be numbered, it means that it's defined, it's limited. Beginning with the limitation of the 10 sfirot, there are 10 sfirot. And it says in the book of creation, Sefer Yetzirah, 10 sfirot and not 9, 10 and not 11. Without the brackets. Va'ad l'tachlit ha'agbala sheba'olam. So having a number is a definition, is a finite quality, until you get to the most finite, limited aspects that there are in existence. It all starts off with numbering. Numbering is the beginning of definition, which is going to lead to finitude. Va'hakavanahi, and the meaning here is, that the number itself will be of such a kind that it will be beyond number. And that means that in our finite world, our limited world, yumshach should be drawn down, bechinat bli gvul, should be drawn down the infinite which is beyond numbering. So, the number of the Jewish people, let's just try and understand this together. The number of the Jewish people will be such that it's beyond number, and yet the number of the Jewish people are a finite people. They're a group of people here in the world. So to say that their number will be unlimited means that we've somehow got a meeting between the finite and the infinite. There's the finite, physical, human, Jewish people living in the physical world, and there's some kind of infinite dimension which is beyond, and normally one might expect to be beyond physicality altogether, and that infinite dimension is being drawn down and attached or interfacing with the Jewish people, so that suddenly their number is beyond number. Their number cannot be numbered. So that is a very mysterious and powerful image of a meeting of the finite and the infinite. And that immediately answers one of our questions. Actually, we've answered two of the questions, because our first question is, what are we talking about, number and not number? And we're answering that immediately. We're talking about a unity of finite and infinite, of number and beyond number. And the third question was, how does it all relate to Matan Torah, to the giving of the Torah, to the festival of Shavuot? Well, this is now being explained here on line 13 and 14. Shezel ma shenifal b'matan Torah. That is exactly what happened at the giving of the Torah. The giving of the Torah is a process, an amazing process. Shegam bo'olam ha'mugbal, that also in the finite world, Shezeu klaluta inyan de Mitzrayim, which in general, that's the idea of Egypt, coming out of Egypt, or the whole idea of meitzarim, of limitations. Mileshon meitza ugvul. Egypt, Mitzrayim, which shares this word, meitza, limitation. Yeah, that in that realm, yeah, gilu or ein sof abli gvul, the radiance of the infinite, which is absolutely unlimited, that should shine in a place which is limited. So that's what the story of Matan Torah is, that we were in a place which is very finite and very limiting. Okay, so it was so limiting, we weren't able to get the Torah in that situation. But we came out of Mitzrayim, we came out of Egypt, but we're nonetheless finite, limited people, living physical lives, And we come to Mount Sinai and we get the Torah, which is suddenly an interface, an interaction with godliness on an infinite plane, being absorbed, coming into our lives. And those commandments that God gives us are the way that godliness, which is infinite, connects with our physical, limited physical lives. So when God tells us, keep Shabbat, don't worship idols, don't murder, don't commit adultery, whatever, don't bear false witness, all those apparently simple statements, those simple statements, together with the whole Torah, which is at the background of them, those statements are the way in which we, as physical people, reflect and express the infinite, which is beyond physicality. Now, line 17. If we just stop here, we can understand now that this idea, this verse, that there will be a number of the Jewish people, and the number is beyond numbering. We're talking here in a kind of code language, or by dissecting the text, that we're talking here about the process of what the giving of the Torah really is. The giving of the Torah is the infinite becoming part of our finite realm. That's in fact how the Talmud talks about it. It's very interesting. The Talmud speaks about the way the angels were very concerned that God was going to give his holy Torah to us human beings. In the Talmud, the angels ask a question. Keep your beautiful Torah in heaven. Don't give it to the people, human beings on earth. They're going to mess it up. They won't keep it properly. Were they right? Well, they're angels, of course they're right. So God said to Moses, well, Moses, give them an answer. So Moses, first he didn't know what to say, and then finally he said to them, you angels who want to keep the Torah, did you go down into Egypt? So it says, I am God who took you out of the land of Egypt. Are you people who do business that you have to be told not to steal? Do you get married that you have to be told not to commit adultery? The Torah is something which is infinitely sacred, but it's being given to us human beings in our human situation. So the very nature of the Torah is something which is beyond limitation. It's beautiful, it's infinite. And nonetheless, through the laws of the Torah, it's actually fitting into our physical lives. Right? And that's the next step that he makes in this discourse, which is on line 17. Line 17 on page Vav. Ubepchatiyot yoter, in more detail, he named mispar hu inyan mitzvot, the number signifies the commandments. Shenitnu b'mispar, they were given with a number. It's a very interesting fact about the sages that the way they understand the mitzvot of the Torah is that there's a certain number of mitzvot. And they have this number, Tariyag mitzvot, 613 mitzvot. The idea is the word Torah adds up to 611, and then there's Anochi, I am the Lord your God, and there shouldn't be for you idols. We heard from God himself, so that makes 613. So there's Tariyag mitzvot Doraita, the 613 mitzvot of the Torah, V'zayin mitzvot derabanan, and seven mitzvot from the sages. The sages instituted seven mitzvot, the seven mitzvot of the sages are, for example, lighting Shabbat candles, and Hallel, and reading the Megillah, and Chanukah lamp, and Eruvin, and making brachot, and Netilat Yadayim, So those are seven mitzvah which were from the sages. And nonetheless, on each of those mitzvah, we make a blessing. Blessed are you, O God, who sanctified us with your command. Even though it's a blessing from the, it's a mitzvah that comes from the rabbis, it's a very serious mitzvah. And so those seven mitzvah, adding with the 613, make 620 altogether. So in other words, there's a number for the mitzvah. V'nitnu l'mitzvah b'nei Yisrael ha-mitchalek l'shishim ribo. And the mitzvah, the 613 plus 7 equals 620 mitzvah, were given to the number of the Jewish people, which divides into shishim ribo nitzotzot neshamot, 600,000 sparks of souls. Because when the Jewish people got the Torah, there were 600,000 people, 600,000 men, and then the women, and the young people, the old people. And then they multiplied, and so each of those sparks multiplied themselves. But there's like 600,000 basic sparks receiving the Torah, each one of which is a kind of a pathway in the Torah. Shekadei sheyumshechu lamata. And in order that these Torah mitzvot should be drawn down into the world, hutzachu liyot bevchinat hithalkut, they had to be divided up. V'lavo b'mitzvah dafka, they had to divide it up among the Jews, that the mitzvot apply to the Jewish people who are numbered, who have an actual finite number. V'yiridatam mitzorech aliyah, and the fact of them coming down into the world. Sorry, it's not the mitzvot coming down into the world. It's the souls. The souls are 600,000. And in order for those 600,000 to be drawn down into the world, they have to divide up, that each spark, each individual soul divides into many souls. And that's why, thank God, over the generations, there'll be many times that number of 600,000 Jews coming down into the world, coming down in the form of number. And the fact of these souls coming into the world is for the sake of an ascent. The soul comes into the world, but then it comes down with a thirst, with a yearning, with a longing for God. So there is this dividing of all the 600,000 souls, multiplying them into many fragments of souls, so to speak, which we are. And then we are here in the world. And in the world, which we now represent number, there come the mitzvot, which also have number. And what they are purveying to us is infinite godliness. So that we're able to absorb and express and live with infinite godliness. So now we turn over the page. We go to page Zayin. And then, when we have this thirst, right? The last two words on that page were the thirst, the longing for the divine, then that number becomes infinite. Asher lo yimad v'lo yisafer. The number becomes infinite. Shezeu inyan ha-tshuva, because that is repentance. Shehi lemaila misedi ishtal shelot, which is higher than the downchaining of the world. So in other words, we're here in the world. Godliness comes to us in the form of mitzvot, which divide up and have numbers, and we divide up and have numbers. But what is really, what it's connecting us to is the essence of the divine, which is beyond number. And we have a yearning for the essence of the divine. And that yearning is a movement of tshuva, of repentance, which connects us above at a very exalted level beyond the downchaining of the world, so that we are connected at the level of the infinite. So that is the process of that's the process of the giving of the Torah. That's really the process of the purpose of existence. Existence was created in order that there should be this finite realm, and in this finite realm, we should be able to connect with the divine who is infinite. And we are finite in all kinds of different ways, including how many we are. And the mitzvah, in order to reach us, they also have to be finite, specific. Each mitzvah is something which fits into a sort of a physical dimension. You know, When you make kiddush, for example, you know, how big should the glass be? Is a thimbleful enough wine? No, it has to be a certain minimum level. They say 86 cc, so which is the numerical value of the word kos, cup. So 86 cc is the minimal value, the minimum value of a glass of wine to make kiddush. So there's a definition, that there's a measure, how much. And through those mitzvot, which extend into our limited physical world with all those definitions and how much and how many, and then we are able, through those mitzvot, we relate to God, who is absolutely infinite. And the trigger which enables us to relate to the divine in such an intense way, the way that it's expressed here in the discourse, is tshuva, is repentance. Is the yearning that we, in a finite realm, we yearn for God who is infinite. We yearn for that which is beyond finitude. And that's the way we're connecting at a level which is beyond the downchaining, the physical manifestation of existence. We're reaching towards God who is beyond that. Okay, so that's basically that's answered the first two questions. What is the idea of number and not number? And how does it relate to Shavuot and the giving of the Torah? We now come to the middle question, which is how does it relate to the verses of this actual Haftorah, the different things the verses say? And so we're going to have a look at that. Is there any other question or point before we launch into this?
Wasn't Moshe supposed to be one of those who could see from the till the end of time?
Yeah. What's going
to happen?
Right.
Was he?
Yeah, well, it describes in the Talmud, it describes how he was, when he was on Mount Sinai, he was able to see each generation and its teachers.
Each generation has teachers, so when you talk each generation, you mean how they exist, or what level?
Well,
spiritual level, that, what does that mean?
It says, dor v'dor shav. Each dor, each generation, and dor shav, like doresh, the teachers of each generation. So it then tells us a beautiful image of Moshe seeing the time of Rabbi Akiva. And he goes and joins Rabbi Akiva's class, standing at the back. But, So what do you mean by that question?
Because the rationalizations you were giving for when talking to the angels about, you know, going to business and things like that, when in the desert there weren't in business. So presumably he was seeing forward to later time. I thought that the whole point of why they didn't really want to leave the desert was their existence there was spiritual, not
right. Yeah. Well, that's another point. Yeah, that's later on that they wanted to stay in the desert because it was such a spiritual experience. That's true. You put your finger on an important thing. The whole nature of Torah is that it is something which comes down into a physical realm of real life and physical life and going to business and doing work and being in a real world and being part of a real physical world. The Torah is not being in an ethereal way beyond the world. It's one of bringing the ethereal into the world.
That was my train of thought.
What?
So that was just...
Okay.
All right. So Matan Torah was the actual event that made the interface between the infinite and the finite possible.
Yes.
Created that interface.
Yes.
And for us to actually cross that boundary, we have to follow the mitzvot.
Yeah. It's like joining the boundaries. Mm. It's as if we're joining two realms together. It's not that we go into a spiritual realm. It's that from our physical position, the spiritual realm comes and joins us. Or, you know, we move as well, you know, we reach up to it. But what we're trying to do is join two realms together.
But by joining, do we stop at that interface, or is there... transfer of energy or something between the two? It must be.
Well, this connection of the infinite with the finite is a constant process, which we are then able to try to express in all aspects of our life. So that, you know, that's a constant aspect of life, living in such a way that the finite and the infinite are joined. Okay, so now we look at chapter 3, Gimel, on page Zayin.
Surely yeah. That connection is there all the time anyway, whether you do the mitzvot or not. Surely the connection is there. And the fact that if you do the mitzvot, I don't know, surely the connection is there. Surely
well, it's there potentially.
Infinitely connected anyway.
Yes, but what can happen is that the world can be very dark. The world can be filled with suffering, and people can be running after the wrong things and confused.
I'm with you. So it's a connection in a positive way.
Yes.
That's the difference.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
It's like having a light plugged in, but you didn't switch it on. Connected.
Yes.
So the possibility. Yeah. What you're saying is that it must be that the possibility of the connection.
It's an awareness.
Yes. Yeah, but then there's the way in which we take the world and the way in which we relate to it and respond to it.
You know, it reminds me of this when you're reading a very hard text. And you plough through it, and you think, and you stop and think, and you plough through it, and suddenly you get it. And that's the difference between whether you do the mitzvahs or you don't do the mitzvahs. It's that. I always remember going through this reading genetics, I think it was, in Hebrew. And you for me, it was, you know. And then suddenly you understood.
But I think it also does connect with genetics in the sense that it kind of breaks down, the fragments that you're talking about break down, and yet they are infinitely connected as well. So it happens as a natural process, but there's also the self-conscious process.
Mm. Mm. So just by virtue of being human, there is already a relationship, potentially, or perhaps actually on some level. It's a little bit like the discourse we were learning last week, which talked about how the way... just through the fact of God saying after the flood that there was going to be the seasons will work and the land will produce food, you know, there's a certain basic contract with existence. But then to get it in a deeper level, you need the mitzvot and actually keeping the mitzvot, and in a more profound way, reaching up to tshuva, repentance, reaching for the divine. So there's some sense in which we have to knit everything together. It's there. But there's something we have to do in order to hold it together. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, page Zion, chapter Gimel, line 4. Vezeo gamma shekatov, and this is also what it says in those verses of Hosea, ki gadol yom Yisrael. Great will be the day of Israel, which means the gathering from being scattered. V'ha'inyim b'zeh, what this means is, d'hinei perush Yisrael, the meaning of the word Yisrael, whose riyat keil, is the scattering, or the sowing of the seed by God. D'kaye ala mitzvot, referring to the mitzvot, in general, the mitzvot can be summarized by the idea of giving tzedakah, giving kindness. Ki chesed nikra b'shem keil. You could call chesed, the word that is used for God here, aleph lamed, but that name of God denotes kindness. And that means sowing exalted radiance from above, sheba mitzvah, which are in the commandments, sheyardu v'nitgashmu, which descended and took form, beinyanim gashmim, in physical things. The mitzvot come down into the world and they become part of the practical world. How much wine do you need in the goblet? for Kiddush, and that wine, you know, never mind how much wine, let's now just think of it as a goblet with wine. This is part of celebrating Shabbat. So we are celebrating Shabbat with candles, with wine, with challah. It's a physical dimension which enables us, and by not doing this and not doing that, that's the way in which we celebrate Shabbat. Shabbat is a very spiritual time, but the way in which we manifest it is in using physical things. Now here gives different examples. Kumot tzitzit shel tzemach, the idea of tzitzit like a talit, utfilin shel alaklaf, and tfilin which are made with parchment, utzdaka bechesef, domem, and then we give charity. We help another person with money, and the money is simply inanimate silver or banknotes or a check or credit card, piece of plastic. Va'al derech ze b'chol sha'a mitzvah. Similarly with all other mitzvah, the mitzvah has some specific, finite, physical connotation. Shezel b'dugmat hazriya b'gashmiyot. That's like sowing seed in physical terms. Shezorin chita ba'aretz. One takes a grain of wheat and sows it in the earth. Shetomnim agarin be'afar. We bury the seed in the earth, shmechase alav, and the earth covers the seed, and the seed is there in the earth, and different kind of juices and water comes from the surrounding earth. Ve'yera kevba, the seed splits in the earth. Ve'davka al yedei zeh, and it's through that naset hatzmicha that comes about the growing. Ve'tosefet meruba, in a wonderful way, that from one seed they can grow different stalks of corn. Each stalk of corn has got many great ears of corn on it. Each stalk has got many ears, so it's increasing. As our sages say, "Klum adam zareya sa'ah ele kadesh yitfasaf kama korin." The person sows a certain amount of grain in order to reap a much bigger amount. Through the rotting, the apparent rotting, the dissolution of the seed in the ground, that has an effect. Now this is a kind of Hasidic botany. How does it work? What happens when we put a seed in the ground? So at the fundament here is that there's a power of growth in the earth. And by putting the seed in the earth, that arouses this power of growth, shebaaretz lahatzmiach b'ribui, so that the seed begins growing with in a flourishing way, many times more than that one seed. Shezer me'em b'chinat ein sof, and that has a certain infinite dimension to it. We put plant one seed in the ground, and many more seeds are produced, and then you could plant them, and many more of those. It's continuously getting more and more. That has the quality of the infinite. Similarly, not sowing seeds, but sowing mitzvah. Shal zenema, as about that, there's another verse. Habayim yashchesh Yaakov. The ones who come are planting, so to speak. They're planting Jacob. And that quality of Jacob, shuinyan abitul, it means the selflessness, like the seed rotting away, through that selflessness of the person, you have the flourishing, the growing, the blossoming, the blooming of Israel. He's quoting other verses that from Tanakh, till the whole world is filled with produce. Shegam b'tevel, that also in tevel, yesh la'inyan d'tnuva, also in the world you have this produce growing, shehugam milashon tnuva, the word tnuva, right? The Israeli milk marketing board, or whatever it's called, is called tnuva. Mm-hmm. And so he's explaining the word tnuva, tnuva. Give in it. Shehiyeh, if we can move, turn over the page. Shehiyeh niklat bevchinat tevel. that the world should absorb. It's like almost the imagery is almost like conception, that the seed enters the womb and there's a moment of conception. The same way the seed of the mitzvah enters into the domain, the spiritual domain, where we do the mitzvah and it causes a kind of conception. And similarly with the seeds that we grow in the ground, we plant them and they take. Yes, one can imagine putting seeds in the ground, nothing happens. But with the help of God, if everything is right, we're sowing at the right kind of year and it's the right kind of soil, then the seed takes and it's the whole process is set in motion. Now, what is this? Taking this in general, line 2, on page Chet, uvichlalut, and in general, hu inyanam shachat o insof abligvul lamata dafka. This is the idea of drawing down the infinite radiance of the Ein Sof below into this physical world. V'yeter mizeh, and even more, k'mo shekatuv ki gadol yom Yisrael, great is the day of the gathering. Yom daika, it uses the word day. Haynu shenaseh hakol b'chinat yom, everything becomes day. It says somewhere else in Tanakh, the night will shine like the day. When the night itself shines like the day, then it becomes a great day, gadol yom, a specially great day. So in other words, we're talking here about a very crucial process, where darkness becomes light, where night becomes day. She'inyan ze nasal yedei tshuva, and this is achieved through tshuva, through repentance. She'al yadam apchim gam et hachoshech lo'or, and it's through repentance that we transform the darkness to light. So we've got here an image that the power of the mitzvah coming to us brings the infinite into our lives. But it seems to be saying that we have to make some kind of extra step. It's not just a simple process. It's where there has to be some kind of movement on our part. And I think that's a way to understand what he calls tshuva, repentance. Tshuva means that one is not just doing the same thing. There's a movement, there's a step, there's some kind of motion. The person thinks, you know what? Up till now we've done this, let's start doing that. And that feeling of the possibility of movement, of adding something, that's making something deeper, making something more meaningful. See, it doesn't only mean forsaking something negative and doing something positive. Tshuva can be moving from one positive thing to a more positive thing. It can be a deepening of our awareness. It can be, but what it is, it's a quest for the infinite. And that quest for the infinite is a kind of a dynamic. It's a movement. It's a sense we want something more. In some way, we want something more, and it's a kind of a mindset that one wants something more. It's not just a matter of coasting along. It's of doing something more and of seeing the Jewish side of ourselves as a dynamic that we can set in motion and actually live through and grow through and discover, and there's something else to do and to discover and to feel a little bit more intensely and to learn this and learn that. The very process of learning means some kind of acquisition of knowledge, ideally not just acquisition of knowledge, but acquisition of a new way of looking at things. Especially when one's learning a piece of Hasidic teaching, there's the opportunity to have a world view, you know, how long it lasts, And whether we're able to maintain it is an interesting question. But to be able to have that view, that what we're doing, we're walking along in terms of this discourse, there's the infinite and the finite, and we're trying to join them together. And in order for us to join them together, there has to be a certain kind of yearning in us. That's the focus on tshuva and repentance. It's you got to stir the mixture. You've poured the infinite into the finite, but now you've got to stir it somehow and get them mixed. And the stirring is the yearning. It's that point within the person that the person is longing for something beyond.
Is it not the case that the tshuva is a non-mundane, non-physical thing that we are doing in order to get to the spiritual connection? And it's almost like we have to do something in a non-physical sense. Tshuva will lead us to do something physical, like the mitzvot. But we have to have that in us to get to do the mitzvot.
You know, that sounds very reasonable. In other words, it's not just cold doing. I mean, even though very often in Chabad Hasidic writing, it emphasizes the tremendous power, the spiritual power that there is in cold doing. You know, you ask someone, you know, would you like to put on tefillin? So the person doesn't feel like it and is not interested. But in fact, it becomes a meaningful thing. And so the action is a step towards a spiritual dimension. And what you're saying, David, is the idea that you have a spiritual movement which enables you perhaps to do the action. You're more ready and you're more enthusiastic about doing the action because of that longing, because of that yearning. So now it speaks about the turning of darkness to light. So this is on line 10. It's another of those moments where it says ubepratiyot yoter, with more detail. Line 10 on page chet. Hine yadu sheyesh shtei deyot b'inyan hachoshech. There are two ways of understanding darkness. Im ze rak he de haor, is darkness just a lack of light, or sheyesh mitziyut shel choshech, or there's some kind of existence which is darkness, which conceals, it tangibly conceals the light. Okay, normally, ordinary physical darkness is just an absence of light. But when we're talking about it morally and as a force inside ourselves, unfortunately, there can be dark forces, there can be dark, destructive dimensions of the person, which can, God forbid, have a very negative effect. And that's like a tangible force of darkness. It's not just an absence of good. Yeah, he didn't do this bad thing just because he doesn't have good manners. It's some much more problematic thrust which has caused this bad thing to happen. Or malata tshuva, the special quality of tshuva, of repentance, he sha'al yada mahapchim, it's that one transforms the darkness. Gamet mitziyot hachoshech, transforming the nature of darkness, shemalimu mastir menaged el haor, which hides the light, shezer shepulat ha-tshuva, and if you turn that into moral or religious terms, the effect of repentance, he, shezedonot na'asu lo kizchuyot, deliberate transgressions become like merits. Now that's an amazing thing, which actually the Talmud talks about in Tractate Yoma, which talks about Yom Kippur, the end of that tractate, talks about the idea that there are two levels of tshuva. One level of tshuva, repentance, the person has done certain bad things, and unfortunately he deliberately did them, and he's very sorry, and he's upset, and he tries to put them right, and he comes to shul, and he fasts, and he beats his chest. You know, I'm sorry, the sin I did about this and about that. And he really is sincere. And the effect of his repentance is that the deliberate sin becomes transformed. Instead of it being like a deliberate sin, it becomes like an accidental sin. It's, you know, it was deliberate, unfortunately. But it's changed in its quality, and what it means now is that it's like an accidental sin. That's one aspect of tshuva, which the Talmud talks about. And then another aspect, his repentance is much deeper. It's a very, very intense repentance. And the effect of that, what would you say is the effect of that?
That's what it says here. Turns their sin into something positive.
That's right. Mm. The sin becomes a positive mitzvah. As if, instead of stealing money, he gave money to someone. It's like changed round. You know, imagine the scenario that there's someone who, unfortunately, he was a thief, he stole money, and now he's so upset about that, and he has really repented for that. Not only is he not going to steal again, he now becomes a person who, he has money, he gives charity, he helps people, he's like turned into like the opposite mode. That's hopefully, let's hope it lasts. So, I mean, then, you know, the sages talk about the test, it refers to it here as well. The test of repentance is getting into exactly the same situation with the same opportunity and not sinning. It's, so that means the person, you know, there was the same way that a few strokes of the pen could transfer the money the wrong way, and God forbid, he's not going to do that at all. So, in other words, through the fact that he sinned, he's now doing a lot of mitzvah, which you could say, if he never had sinned, he wouldn't have done these mitzvah. So, the sin has caused a whole lot of positive qualities, and in a sense, the sin itself has become something positive. If you look at it in the life of the person, the sin has become something positive. Even though, if you analyze, you know, what did he actually do? Well, unfortunately, he stole money, so it's not a good thing. But there's some sense in which the effect of that is transformed. If we go on to page 10, to the next page. Now, so what it's saying, it's pretty late now, so we have to stop soon, very soon. V'hine, kevan sheklalut inyan avodah, since the service is lamshech b'chinat bli gvul, is to draw down the infinite, which is beyond numbers, and to draw it down b'inyan agvul, into the realm of finitude, of mitzvah, of numbers, hari muvan, we can understand, sh'al derech zeh tzarich liot gam. This has to be also Eitzel Adam Oved, for the individual who's trying to serve God, there has to be this meeting of the infinite and the finite. And it goes into various Kabbalistic dimensions, and incidentally, based on the verses. Hi. If you want me. Based on the verses, one page Yud. Based on the verses here. But there's a very interesting thing on page Yud. If we can just look at that, and with this we'll close. Right, the verses said about the idea of making one head. Right, as if there are now two heads. There's Judah and Israel, which were the two countries in ancient Israel. There's the northern kingdom, Israel, and the southern kingdom, Judah. It's split, and sometimes they battle together, unfortunately. And now they're going to be unified. So that idea, that's the theme in the actual prophet Hosea. And now he's translating this on page Yud in line 7. What this means on the personal level, at this moment there are two heads. The upper unity of Yehuda Tata and the lower unity. Now, what he's saying is that these two things, the upper unity and the lower unity, should be unified together and become one. Now, the upper unity and the lower unity are two paths in contemplation. One path in contemplation is where you put your hand over your eyes, you say, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one." And there's a sense that there's only God. There's only God, the whole of existence is just an expression of God. Really, it's the oneness of God is everything. So that's called the upper unity, and it's a mode of contemplation, and it's something that can be part of a person's prayer. It's a very intense moment, if you think about it in that way, that there's only God. And then comes the lower unity. And the lower unity is the idea that there is a world, but the world expresses godliness. In other words, there is a physical world here, and we have to work in the world and conduct ourselves according to Torah laws, and we're going to make the world into a domain where godliness is revealed. That's our goal. But in fact, what we're doing, we're dealing with the world. We're trying to run a business, we're trying to be honest, we're trying to be moral, be pure, be this, be that. We're trying to live in the world. So what he's saying here, which is very unusual, putting it this way, that the upper unity and the lower unity should be joined. And so that means when one is in the world and active in the world, in business and different activities, at the same time there's this sense of the oneness of the divine, that there's only God at the same time. And so it's like two contrasting images, two contrasting pathways of contemplation, which are normally presented as either one or the other. There may be two stages, first one stage, then the other stage, but they don't coexist. And here the discourse is presenting them as something which coexists because it's another version of this knitting together, this sewing together of these two completely disparate dimensions of the finite and the infinite. The infinite is like the upper unity where there's only God, and the finite is the lower unity where you perceive that there is a world, and that we have to try and work to make that express godliness. And so in various aspects of our lives, of which that is a very profound one, we are trying to express this unity of the divine and make a world of darkness into a world of light, and make night into day, and the negative into positive, and through tshuva, through repentance, the sin itself becomes merit, and the whole transformation of existence is there, as it were, in the palm of our hand, and that is what we consider when we face the giving of the Torah next week on Shavuot. So with the help of God, we should be able to experience that together.
What you just described, is that exactly what we say just before Baruch Shema?
That's a very good point. Yes.
Exactly that, isn't it?
See, there's a little line in the prayers which talks about the unifying of two different aspects of the divine. Yes.
But we do that. We do unify.
Our prayer and our mitzvah bring about that unification. Mm.
The Shekhinah is down here.
Yeah.
Fantastic.